Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
According to the U.S. Green Building Council, buildings are responsible for 40% of the country's energy consumption and 39% of CO2 emissions. Therefore, buildings represent an important target for greenhouse gas reduction, and during the last decade, the country has seen significant progress in that regard. From the U.S. GBC's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED certification system, to the Architecture 2030 Challenge, to CalGreen, the first mandatory statewide green building code in the nation. The ultimate goal is zero energy buildings, structures that make as much energy as they consume.
With us today to discuss innovations in energy-efficient buildings and greenhouse gas reduction is Roger Frechette, president of Positive Energy Practice, whose work focuses on sustainable engineering and building design. Roger, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's my pleasure. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Can you tell us a little bit about your company? You founded this organization, I think, in 2010. What was your intent? What were your objectives? And tell us something about your current practice.
Sure. We did start the firm a couple of years ago. Really, the idea was that we felt that there was a need in the market for an engineering firm that was very specifically focused on green building designs, on energy-efficient designs, looking not only at new buildings, but retrofitting existing buildings, and also looking at very sustainable ways to look at new city design and decarbonization, we call it, of existing city infrastructure. So that is the focus of the firm.
What kind of projects are you working on right now, buildings or other structures, new retrofits, anything interesting you're working on you can share with us?
Sure. We have a number of projects all over the world right now working on very energy efficient tall buildings. In Korea and in China. We're also working on the renovation of a very important existing building in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, the Prime Minister's office building here in Malaysia. It's about a million square foot building where we're seeking to reduce its energy consumption by about 40 to 50%.
So can you tell us something about some of the design innovations that you bring to these buildings, both new and retrofit?
Sure. We generally look at opportunities for saving energy in four different categories. We look at what we call absorption strategies, which are looking at natural energy sources that surround a building, everything from wind, water, temperatures in the ground, solar hitting the building and converting it into electricity. So those are absorption strategies. We have reduction strategies. Those are areas where we can reduce the building's energy consumption through technology within the building. We have what we call generation strategies, the ability to generate energy in the building in a much more efficient way than what we've been able to do. And the fourth category is what we call reclamation strategies, where we look at energy that's inside the building. We capture it and reuse it over and over again. But some of the more advanced strategies we've been using lately are things like radiant cooling ceilings, where we use the ceiling plane of the building to cool the occupants rather than conventional air conditioning systems. Very advanced mechanical systems result in a very significant reduction in the amount of energy that a building consumes over the course of a year.
This ceiling system, how does that work?
Well, what happens is we move water through coils that are mounted right onto the ceiling panels themselves, and it lowers the temperature of the entire ceiling plane. So when building occupants move into a room, there's actually a radiation exchange that takes place between the ceiling plane and the individuals, making them comfortable in the space, rather than pushing large quantities of air through a building. So because of the because of the efficiency in using water rather than air as a cooling medium, the overall energy that a building needs to operate is greatly reduced.
It's like a reverse on the radiator.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, when we were reading the intro, one of the things that really grabbed my attention was this zero-energy building, a structure that makes as much energy as it consumes. That wasn't a very much of a hook to my interest. How could a building generate its own energy?
Well, there's a number of different strategies that are being used. What happens in most cities, most regions, is buildings rely off of they run off of a rather conventional electrical grid, and that is electricity may be generated at a power plant, in many cases a coal-fired power plant located along a river, and that energy is transported to the building. There's a lot of heat loss to the environment that takes place during that process. So to power up a single 100-watt light bulb inside a building, you generally need to generate about 1,000 watts of power back at the plant.
Wow.
So 90%, 80 to 90% of all that energy is lost in transport. So if we can think of buildings as power generators, as mini power plants distributed throughout the grid and generate electricity at a much higher efficiency, the overall energy consumed by a city goes down considerably. So there are systems that you can put into buildings right now to generate electricity that have efficiencies of 70, 80, even 85%, mainly because you have the ability to recapture the heat in the building and reuse it. So technologies such as fuel cells and microturbines have really come a long way in the last few years and are beginning to show up in large buildings around the country.
So when you look at technologies like that, I mean, the image that I have is that there's a front-end cost that may be substantial. The benefit comes over a long period of time in terms of savings. What's the payback period, typically, that your clients are looking at?
Well, it really depends on the type of client. We certainly have commercial clients and commercial developers that are looking for very rapid returns on their investment. We have institutional clients, government clients, and academic clients that plan on being in their buildings a much longer period of time. So for those clients, they tend to take advantage of the of a larger selection of systems and longer payback periods. But even for those that don't necessarily have the capital to make that additional investment up front, there are a number of different programs available to help people right now gain access to capital if the clients are willing to share their energy savings with those groups over the period of time.
So are you talking about things like government incentives?
Government incentives, but there are also private companies out there now that are doing off-balance sheet type financing where they'll come in and through essentially a power purchase agreement, they can take care of the financing, installation, and in some cases maintenance of equipment inside the building, and then sell that energy to the building owner over a period of time. They're not necessarily, the building owner isn't necessarily having to make that investment themselves up front.
So the way you describe it, it sounds to me like you've got an outside investor who shares the benefits with the building owner and therefore is willing to make an investment in the system.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Now, what we do on the design side to help organize our own thoughts, we tend to look at all the different sustainable strategies that you might consider for a building, and there are hundreds and hundreds of them, and we sort them into three categories. We refer to it as our shades of green, light green, medium green, and dark green. Light green items are a whole list of things that we believe should be considered within a building design, and for our designs, they're virtually automatic, meaning they're elements that pay for themselves either instantly or almost instantly when you begin to operate the building. So we believe they should be part of every building design. The medium green items, they're a little more difficult in that they do require additional investment and the payback periods could be a little bit longer, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. So for each of those items or opportunities, those are studied individually. And we work with the client to see whether or not it's something that they can make that additional investment and are interested in and including into their projects. The dark green strategies, these are things that generally have longer paybacks, or in some cases they don't have a return on investment at all. But there are some cases where clients are looking to have green or sustainable systems in their building, even if they don't necessarily pay themselves off. They may have other reasons to be green that go beyond just a return on investment.
So what's the balance that you see in the marketplace? That is, to what extent are people making these investments based on economics as opposed to, if you will, on the basis of philosophy?
I would say it's probably 95% based on economics right now. It is usually clients like a government entity or maybe I'll give you one example. A number of years ago, I worked on a project for the National Wildlife Federation in Reston, Virginia. And there, green is obviously part of their mission. So a number of the strategies we used in their design of their headquarters building didn't necessarily pay themselves off in short order, but it was important to the culture of their practice and their overall mission.
Do you ever get into post-project audits so that after a building is built, you come back and look and see the extent to which it's performed the way you expected it to do?
Sometimes. It's actually fairly rare right now, and I think that's beginning to change. I think that there has been fear in the marketplace that by really studying these types of things may open themselves up to some form of liability. But with the changes, recent changes to the U.S. Green Building Council's LEED program, where they require that post-construction audit, I think that that may be one of the greatest changes that we see in the marketplace over the next 5 to 10 years is information coming forth about the actual performance of some of these green designs.
And the greening of existing buildings is also a very important component if we're going to get substantial change in building energy consumption. And we understand one of your existing building projects involves the Willis Tower, which used to be called the Sears Tower. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing there?
I could tell you probably very little. it's more of an idea than anything else at this point. And we've had, I would say, very little involvement so far. But there have been some ideas put forth by ourselves and other engineering firms in Chicago about ways to reduce the consumption of the building. And I've seen studies and reports that suggest that building's energy consumption could be reduced by as much as 50%. And I do think that building in Chicago does represent a great opportunity to save energy. The entire building is constructed right now with single pane glass. You know, so simply by looking at changing the type of glass on the building, which is something that probably needs to happen soon anyways because of the age of the facade, but by improving the thermal conditions of that glass, the building could see tremendous savings in energy.
And another one of your interesting projects is the Chicago Decarbonization Plan. Can you tell us a little bit about it, who the stakeholders are, and what the plan hopes to achieve?
Sure. The former Mayor Daley, he had a strong stance in sustainability and in his desire to save energy and reduce carbon emissions associated with the city. And his goals to reduce the carbon emissions by the city by 80% by the year 2030. So we see goals like this being set by mayors and state leaders around the world. What we thought was missing in the city of Chicago was a specific roadmap of how to get there, and how you would specifically, what is the step-by-step plan to go through from a starting point and drive down to that lower carbon number. So the decarbonization plan is something that we worked with along with Adrian Smith and Gordon Gill Architects, and it is exactly that roadmap. It looks at the city from a perspective of energy and water and waste and land use and community engagement, and comes up with a whole series of strategies step by step of how you would how you could realize that level of reduction over time over the next 10 years or so.
Thinking beyond Chicago, but along those same lines, I mean, that's the kind of citywide or regional approach. Given the state of the economy in the United States, I mean, what's your sense of what the market interest is, the economic market and the political market, for moving ahead on sustainability plans of this type?
Well, I honestly think it has everything to do with the strength of the economy. Those tremendous steps being taken 3-4 years back to change buildings and to make additional investment in buildings up front to save energy over time, but as the economy has softened, there's really, I think, been a reduction in those kind of activities. I think in the city of Chicago, the focus does need to be on the existing buildings. There doesn't seem to be a lot of planning going on right now for new structures, but the existing building stock in the city is aging, and as these buildings and their systems reach the end of their useful life, they need to be replaced with much more efficient systems, and I think that is the best opportunity for the city to save energy and reduce carbon.
So you mentioned involvement in some projects in Asia. Is the market for sustainable buildings, green buildings, energy savings, is it better in that part of the world right now than it is in the United States?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the answer to that question is yes. A couple years back, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was in, I guess a few more than that, 6 or 7 years ago, I was involved in the design of a building in Guangzhou, China, that its original goal was to be a net zero energy building, a zero carbon building. And it's been constructed now. It isn't it didn't quite hit that mark, but it is a extremely efficient building. And it uses dozens and dozens of these absorption, reduction, generation, and reclamation strategies. But in any event, when we first started that project, we talked about all the different technologies we could use on the building, and one of them was photovoltaics. And at that time, there was resistance because there was fear that it would be very difficult to find a good photovoltaic panel manufactured in China. And that was 7 years ago. Now, today, China is the world's leader in the production and export of photovoltaic panels. So things are changing quite rapidly there and throughout China, much more rapidly than they are in the U.S. right now.
So do you see the possibility that you're going to bring back work in that part of the world, you bring back ideas to the United States as perhaps the economy turns around and people's interests change in that direction?
Well, that is our hope. I mean, our practice is an international practice. Right now we're working, again, in China, Korea, Russia, Malaysia, and elsewhere. So we'd like to think that we are slowly gathering the knowledge of the best practices of what are being done in each of those countries. And when the economy does turn around in the U.S., hopefully we'll be there to be able to help our clients and bring that knowledge to bear on their projects.
And in much of your practice, you collaborate with architects, usually the practice of Adrian Smith and Gordon Gill. How does the collaboration work? How do you share responsibilities when you're working together with an architecture firm?
Well, again, here's another area where I think the market and the industry is changing. There was a time when those disciplines were completely separated, meaning an architect may work on a building and develop it to a particular point of completion. And then at that point, they would engage an engineer to design systems that sat sort of in the basement or above the ceiling or in a mechanical space that had been allocated by the architect early in the design. Now we're finding that these designs are much more integrated, where the engineers and the architects are working together the very first day of the project, and there's a blurring of the lines. We see these systems beginning to come together and again be much more integrated. And I think this project in China I mentioned a minute ago, I think, is an excellent example of that kind of integration. And in that case, it has the exterior wall of the building is also the return air system for the HVAC system for the building. The ceiling plenum there is also a radiant system, so the ceiling is also the cooling system. And then the structure, the body of the building itself, helps to generate electricity through wind power. So these disciplines that used to be quite separate are now all coming together as one system.
So would a layperson looking at a building that was built with those comprehensive objectives in mind, would he or she see that building differently? That is, would it look different than what you might call a more traditional building?
In some cases, yes. In the example of that one project in China, there are four very large wind turbines built right into the body of the building, and air passes through the center of the building. So if you're driving down the street and you look up at that building, you automatically see that there's something very, very different about it.
And what do you see as the future for lower zero-energy buildings in terms of materials and technologies? How close are we to being able to regularly build those kind of buildings?
Well, all the technology is there today, and I think that it's going to require, for us to make that step, at least in the United States, it's going to require, I think, the government to provide some better incentives, and I think it's also going to require some code changes. And I know that's beginning to happen right now. It's happened in California, and that trend will continue. But I think with the better incentives, with the changes in codes, and with the economy slowly coming back to life, I think we'll see these types of buildings being designed and built in the U.S. Certainly in this decade.
It's very interesting and very encouraging. Really appreciate that you've spent the time with us. I guess I want to pursue one real quick additional question, and that is, it seems to me that this is a very new market. This is a very new business. Are you finding the talent that you need to pursue this? Are you getting the professional skills that necessary to serve these clients?
We are. The old way of operating our types of firms in this business were to rely most heavily on the more senior staff and to bring engineers in from the colleges and universities and put them into somewhat of a mentorship or apprenticeship type of process. And that is entirely changing. It is really the students that are coming out of school right now that are bringing some of the best ideas and most innovative ideas to consider. So what is, I think, changing is the way that engineering firms need to operate now. They still need to take advantage of that educational curve that has already has always taken place. But it really does require the firms to open up and be prepared and willing to listen to these younger engineers coming in from school and to invest the time and energy to try to advance their ideas as well.
It's interesting and an incentive for us to make sure that we prepare those kinds of people to come to firms like yours and make a solid contribution. We appreciate your spending the time with us. It's been the most interesting and enjoyable. It's an important path that you're defining for us, and we look forward to watching your buildings new and old in the future. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.